Go ahead, make me pay. But if that's all the power you've got, you're gonna have a lot of trouble collecting.
You're missing the point.
Huh?
Welcome to the Objective Secure podcast. My name's Mike.
And I'm Emma.
And this is episode 15, What's the Point? Well, what is the point for today's podcast? We're going to be talking all things points values for tournaments, particularly focusing on Warhammer 40,000, which is our go-to because it's our biggest events and it's one we get the most feedback on. So we're going to be talking about what it means to change the points value for events and how players might see it and perceive it and some of the other intricacies that go along with changing the points values. And obviously some of the concerns that players will definitely have when you start messing about with their favourite 2,000-point army list.
We'll also be covering, I guess, why we choose the point levels that we do for the different events that we run across a year.
Yeah, and it's going to be an interesting one because we've had a fairly lengthy conversation on one of the OBSEC pages, the OBSEC Gamers group. If you are on Facebook, you're welcome to come along and join us there and be part of the conversation.
And that's where this topic actually came from. So one of the members on there, Steve, posted it as a potential topic for us to cover on a video or a podcast. So
thanks,
ask
Steve,
and you shall receive. Here we are.
Yeah. But before we get stuck into the topic today, we've got a few little things. I know we've mentioned this in the last couple of events. We do have some OBSEC events coming up. And we might as well cover... touch base very quickly with those and cover some of the other stuff that we've been on for the last couple of weeks. If you haven't checked out any of the other channels or any of the other content links that we have, we've talked about virtual gaming dice on the website and got some interesting topic conversation happening on the Facebook page and then obviously on the topic itself on the website.
Yeah, it seems to be one of those topics that really polarizes the community, with some people vehemently against it and other people all for it.
Yeah, it's a really... you capture the word polarizing pretty quickly there, but it's certainly a topic that I think is only going to become more prevalent as time goes on. So it's something that the community needs to start thinking about and how we handle that and address that, not just at a local level, but at larger international events is probably something that needs to be discussed sooner rather than later. We've had our first game with the Drakari Codex, which hopefully by the time you're listening to this will be up on the YouTube channel as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sly Dave came around on Munda Codex Sunday night and we had a game. And both of us were very excited about that. He's probably more excited than I am because I know he's just gone and dumped a whole bunch of money on Dark Eldar and he's now very happy he did. So mine just came out of the battle phone bag. And I literally took my army from, 5th edition, 2012, 2013, put it on the table and we were both very impressed with the results. So it's cool to have a new Dark Eldar Codex. I'm still going to struggle to call them Drakari because they've been Dark Eldar for so long. It's the same with the Eldar and the Eldari, and Games Workshop's changes to the names to ensure some of the legal ramifications are covered for them. Mm. They're still Dark Eldar to me. So I'm sure there's a song that's something like that, isn't there?
Not that I know of.
I'm sure that it's maybe not Dark Eldar, but there's a song that goes with "You'll Always Be Something to Me," but it doesn't matter. Moving on.
Yeah, okay.
I do have one little horror story that I have to share. I played my first game with my Tau army on Friday last week.
It's Friday night and we're recording this on Wednesday and he's only just stopped crying.
So I played the game down at our local club, Crags, and had a good game with the lovely guy, Alan. He sent me his army list, had it all recorded and stuff. And we were packing up and it was fairly late. And I was packing up all the video gear and the laptop and all the rest of it. I had all that packed up on the table. I picked my bag up and put it on the other end of the table so I could start packing up the army. And the legs collapsed on the table. And the whole army, laptop, iPad, camera, everything slid down the end of the table that had just something like just dropped to the floor. And in that split decision moment, I grabbed the laptop and the iPad and the camera rather than the army, which has been a polarizing decision for anyone who's seen me talk about this, and I'm sure it will be if you're listening to this now, and watch the army slide down the table and scatter itself all over the floor with my bag on top of a lot of it, because I didn't grab the bag, I actually grabbed the hardware. And with the towel, you get a lot of antennas and you get a lot of flying stands and you get a lot of pokey-outy bits.
That'd be the technical term for that, the pokey-outy bits.
Yep.
And now, now his army has no pokey-outy bits.
Well, it's taken me a few days and a lot of angst and anguish, but I've actually got it all back together now, and I've had to drill out flying stands and find replacement antennas. And the army took quite a pummeling. There's a lot of paint that I've sort of half repaired and gotten them, so there's no bare metal anymore, but all the highlights need replacing. That was a really frustrating moment, because it actually took a lot of the drive out of me finishing painting the army. Because I looked at it and went, right, this is going to take me 2 to 4 days to fix. Great.
Let me put some drive back in. You're playing with that army in 2 weeks' time.
Less than two weeks' time.
Oh, yep. God, it's like 10 days.
It is. So I'm going to have to finish this army in the next 48 hours, I guess.
Yeah, because we've still got a whole heap of terrain.
Well, I've got 3 tables worth. I've got 2 to go. So, it was gutting, because we're using metal. I've got 18 metal stealth suits in the army, and of course those backpacks came off and antennas bent, and yeah, it was, I sort of cleaned it all up, brought it all home, and basically sat up until about 2 a.m. doing what I could with it, and then I realized that if I kept going, I was going to do more harm than good, so I just kind of wrote it off and got back to it the next day on the Saturday, and took all day Saturday and most of Sunday to get it back together, and it's taken another couple of days of putting paint back on to try and repair it. So yeah, that was kind of gutting. It wasn't great, but it was a win prior to the table collapse, so that was something, like, I guess.
Yeah, we take what you can from that, but obviously, with you saying that it will polarise people who are listening to this, I guess the thing is that if you'd rescued the army and not the laptop, people wouldn't be listening to this. So,
well, that is true.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was my Friday night adventure, which kind of sucked. What else have we had happen? Oh, we've got our obsec dice now, and we've been handing those out now since the first ones we gave out were down in Albany and Linebreaker a few weeks back, and we're now going to be in a position to offer those to people at events. We've also obviously got the pile set aside for the guys who bought show bags at show last year, now that the supplier's finally given us the dice. So if you're interested in getting any of the obsec dice, we'll get some pictures up to go with this recording on the website, so you can grab a set of obsec dice. I know most people are getting 2. So they've got their sets of 16, and they're the Chessex size 16. I think they're 16mm dice. So, if you want some OBSEC dice, they'll probably go on the website for sale very shortly, but you can pick them up from OBSEC events here in Western Australia. You can also email us or send us a message on Facebook or wherever, and we can take that up privately, and I can give you a shipping cost, and we can send them to you wherever you are in the world listening to us. So I think that kind of covers most of the stuff. I mean, we weren't going to talk too much about WATC, although the rigmarole in getting here has been interesting. We're going to pick up a bunch of trestle tables this afternoon because we've had to buy so many.
And well, we're not. You're picking up the kids and I'm picking up trestle tables. Well, yeah. But, you know, I suppose the obsec we.
Yep. And we've got all 120 army lists in now, which is pretty amazing. That was a challenge all of its own.
Yeah, congratulations to all of the captains who managed to get those all in on time.
If not in the right format.
Yeah, it was a bit of a challenge, as you said, putting them all together. All the armies were supposed to come in as a single Word document.
Per team. So we should have gotten 20 documents, and I didn't get 20 documents.
We should have gotten 20 documents with six army lists listed, and we probably got 10 documents with 6 army lists listed, and then a couple of PDF documents, and a couple where they were all in individual Word documents, and a couple where some were in Word documents and some were in something else, and some were so. But
yeah, we had a team that was 6 different formats in a single email with 6 separate army lists.
So it just added to the challenges of from our perspective as TOs. But having said that, what is it, 123 page document?
It's 100. It's one page is the cover page,
mm-hmm.
And then
just to bulk it out because you didn't want it to seem stingy.
Yep. And then there's 120 army lists, and I managed with the formatting to get all of them down onto a single page each, except 2. So that's where the extra 2 pages come from. So it's 120 army lists across 122 pages.
123 pages with the cover page.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. we made a couple of errors where somebody submitted a list and then prior to date submission and then said, I'm sorry, submitted the wrong list. We've collected the list and accidentally put the original one instead of the second one. So that's all being fixed and they're all available on the Facebook page if people want to check out what people are bringing to WATC.
And there's obviously a few errors that are snuck through, like no warlords named and a few different points discrepancies. So once they're all finalised and correct, then they'll be uploaded to the Objective Secured website and you'll be able to access them from the links section.
So the way that it works, we've asked all of the players, well, all the captains on behalf of their players, to submit their lists by, it was supposed to be last Friday, and then we were waiting for the FAQ, so we sort of pushed that out a little bit. And then they're now available for all the players to go through and check for errors.
Well, they're also on the Facebook page, the public Facebook page as well.
Yeah, but the idea is that the players will go through, they'll check for errors, and then we'll be able to make corrections.
Yep.
And they have to be finalised by...
This Saturday. Or this Friday? This Saturday. One of the two.
Yeah, that's what I was
this weekend.
With. And so then we will obviously make those corrections that we get sent through and they will be available on the website from probably Monday.
Yep. And we're also going to, once the lists are all finalised and locked away, then we can do the first draw for round one so you guys can spend a week plotting and scheming against each other. I was kind of torn whether we do that on the day or not, but I actually quite like that lead up to... where everyone kind of gets caught up and it kind of creates a bit of a rivalry happening for that first week as people second-guess each other.
Good-natured rivalry.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've had one team ask for grudge matches and we've chosen to go no on that regard, partly because we want to make sure that that first draw round is random and then it's paired purely on Swiss so that it is the best team that actually wins the day.
Yeah, we have done grudge matches... I guess in some of our other events for the last game of the event.
Well, we've done it for firsts as well occasionally.
Yeah, this is just not an event that we really want to have grudge matches with. I think grudge matches sometimes can set things up with a different tone and we're really trying to make sure that we're setting the right tone for the event.
I also think just purely from a gaming point of view that if you've got a team of six where one of the guys is desperate to play one of the other players and another team and you agree to a grudge match, you can almost set your own team back at that point and take yourself out of the competition just because one player wants to settle a good-natured rivalry.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's something we've just decided, look, you know what, this is not the event for grudge matches. Mm. So we've taken it out of the mix. And, yeah. We'll let the chips fall where they may in terms of matchups around one. Someone will have to play the team that wants to grudge match, and hopefully it's one that they're happy to play.
Yeah, that's it. Hopefully it's one of the grudge matches that they wanted to have.
So, but we'll record that with a random number. Like, we'll basically set up a random generator online, record it, and then post it up so everyone can see the matchups live. But, look, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk all things points values and formats, but primarily points values for Warhammer 40,000. So let's get stuck into this topic. We kept the opener a little bit short because I'm not sure how this is going to go. We could blow this topic out quite lengthy. So we'll see how we track.
It's
so,
not like us to be long-winded. And
well, I had to contact the hosting service to extend the bandwidth on our website so that we could record longer than an hour episodes a couple of times now. So we'll see what happens with this one.
We'll try and make sure that we... stick on point.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah.
So points values in tabletop games is, and we'll talk tabletop games in general to kick off. A lot of the organized play events that you see around the world, whether it's for 40K or Age of Sigma or Bolt Action or Malifaux or War Machine or any X-Wing, any of those, a lot of them have formats that are, I suppose, suggested by the manufacturer, by the owning company. So X-Wing, when you start doing tournaments, tends to be 100-point fleets. They do have formats for other sizes, but the one I've seen mostly online around is 100-point fleets. Mm-hmm. And obviously things like War Machine tend to stick to, again, very set brackets for different formats. Malifaux is a little bit more flexible, but again, they've got different points. I know they're not called points, but they're different values for different missions. Whereas when you hit the Age of Sigmar and Warhammer 40,000 community, because the company in question isn't as active and isn't as, I suppose, invested in the competitive circuit at the moment, and I use the word competitive loosely because a lot of these games and all the ones...
Probably are using the word invested relatively loosely as well.
Look, I mean, a lot of these games are marketed as competitive games, and even then they're still games, so they're not necessarily as competitive as you might like to think they are. But certainly Games Workshop haven't been active. Certainly, to give them credit, the last couple of years they've gotten more and more active. But prior to that, it was really up to independent tournament organisers to set the standards. And you kind of walk a very fine line as an organiser when you don't have that directive from the company as to what you're actually doing. So part of the biggest issue that you'll have as an organiser is setting those points values. And then if it's not what the community is willing to engage with or invest in, you can end up with an event that essentially falls flat.
Mm.
Which is probably the biggest hurdle as organisers that we have, is making sure that we're giving the community what they want, but is also something that's achievable.
Yeah.
And
trying to find that balance.
When I say achievable, though, I don't mean, can we run the event? Of course we can run the event. What I mean is the event going to be something that players want to repeat? Is it going to be a successful event based on the outcomes?
Well, it's also, is it achievable in, and it's probably something that we'll cover later on, but is it achievable for the players as well?
Yeah. I mean, there's actually quite a conversation going on at the moment on Facebook in one of the competitive 40K groups around this very topic. And it's partly part of the reason why I was keen to talk about this online as well, because I got my two cents to throw in, but Facebook doesn't really get the message across sometimes. That 2,000 points is the way you play 40K. That's just the way it is. Now, what's interesting about that is I think that's something that was perpetuated at the transition from 7th to 8th, mm. because in 7th edition, you didn't play 2,000 points. You played 1750, 1850, that sort of number around the world. I don't recall there being anything that was over 2,000, and even 2,000s were fairly rare in 7th edition. And when 8th edition dropped for 40K, we all assumed that, hey, the games are going to be faster.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's to do with that assumption. So before 8th edition dropped, there was assumption that, well, so for our event, Masters would need to go to 2250 because games were going to be faster, points levels were going to change, and that assumption before we'd actually had a chance to see what 8th edition looked like.
And even once it did drop, I think we'd all convinced ourselves
as
players that that was the case. Oh, look, you know, I copied my 2,000 point army and now it's only worth 1,500 points. So now, like, oh my God. And we had it the other way around. Oh, my 2,250 point army is now 1,500 points. And I don't think any of us had the experience or...
That's the same way around. You just did a bigger number.
Oh, I meant 1,500 went to 2,250 and those sorts of things.
I thought that's what you meant, but it's not what you said.
Anyway.
Focus, darling.
We ended up in a situation where we all kind of leapt to those conclusions without any data, without any supporting evidence, and we've now ended up in a situation...
Oh, no, I'm struggling to believe that. Gamers struggling to conclusions? Jumping to conclusions.
We've seen a couple of really major events around the world, and even our larger events here in Perth, we've seen that games not finishing in what would have been completed in a similar time at, you know, an army that was 1,500 points is now 1,850, an army that was 1,850 is now 2,250. We've seen those games where, in theory, they should be completing at the same times, but they're not. And that was sort of highlighted at the Las Vegas Open and then almost confirmed at Adepticon. And, you know, it's funny because as you got to the higher end tables, you got less and less turns. It wasn't the middle of the pack or the low end of the pack that was slow playing or not even slow playing, just taking longer to finish games. It was the high end of the field that was taking longer to finish games.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily got anything to do with points level, to be honest. I think that's more to do with the strategy and the thoughts and the decision-making process that goes into...
That's all directly related to points, though. I completely disagree. It's all related to points. Because if they had smaller armies, then there's less decisions to make.
But it's not necessarily related to points, is it? Because if you've got someone who's a higher-end player who's playing a slower game than a lower-end player, they're playing the same points levels. That's not about points then. It's about the players in question and the...
But it all comes back to points. because the high-end player, despite taking longer to play the game, still has more models on the table than he would have if it was 1500. There's more decisions to be made. So the player in question is still taking longer, but because there's more decisions to be made.
I'm not sure if we're necessarily talking about the same thing. I can see that what you're saying is that by that change in points value and the change in models has resulted in slower playing. But what I'm saying is that the two players who are playing with the same points levels, one is playing slower than another player because of the more cognitive thinking that has to go into the higher end players.
Yep. But I'm saying there's a direct correlation between the two. Because if you play a 1,000-point game and you take the full hour and a half to play the 1,000-point game and someone else takes 35 minutes, that still highlights the fact that, yes, they're taking longer because they're thinking more about it. But if they're not finishing the game in an hour and a half, then the model count is, like, the points value is still directly related to all that.
It's related, yes. I'm just saying that there's other factors at play.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm saying, like, points is directly correlated to that. Because, like, we saw it with some of the games where, you know, the model count's 50 models and they're getting to turn three in, you know, nearly three-hour games for a 2,000-point game. Where, I mean, Dave and I, when we played our game with the Drakari and the Craftworld Eldar, it was a 1,750-point game. We knocked off in just over 2 hours, and a quarter hours to get through for the four turns. But, you know, it's... I do think that we all kind of jumped to the conclusion that we could up the points, and it's done a couple of things in doing that. The first thing it's done is change the way we all build army lists, and by that I mean WATC for us here is 1,500 points, and I made the deliberate choice when I wrote the players pack to go two detachments, not three.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a few people going, oh, it's really hard to write an army list at 1,500 points and two detachments. That was the point.
Hmm.
That was literally the decision-making process, is if I just go 1,500 points and three detachments, people get exactly what they want and there's no challenge. And the fact we've got 120 players attests to the fact that everyone was keen for that challenge. And I think...
I don't know that they were keen for the challenge. They were keen to play in the event, not necessarily for the challenge.
They have to want to go to the event, though.
Would you not want to go to an event with 120 players?
Well, yeah.
And I'll make it work. If this is the rules that they're putting in place, then yeah, I'll make it work. But ideally, I'd rather have 1,500 points and three detachments.
But
I think you are keen for the challenge.
Yeah, well, that's true. I think, though, that particularly in 40K, where you've got the detachment limit and the points value limits, there's a few people that have gotten used to, and probably myself included, have gotten used to having access to just the right attachments to make the army do exactly what I want to do, get as many command points as I want, and then obviously have enough points to get the units I want. And when you start messing with either of those things, players go, oh, hang on, my army doesn't work anymore. And it's not necessarily because their army doesn't work anymore, it's because they can't run the army list that they...
My army doesn't work the way I want it to anymore.
It's not even that I want it to, it's that I
or I'm am used to.
I think is the key thing, because... there was talk of the next Crags event saying that what points value should everyone play. And the universal wall of comments was 2,000, 2,250. I said 1,817 or 1,850 and got booed down. And
see, this is why we run our own events.
And the funny thing is, I'm assuming that what will happen is they won't go 2,000 or 2,250 because the first hurdle that generates is time.
So shall we actually, before we go any further, shall I actually read out what the question was online? So the question is in the Facebook page, Obsec Gamers, which is OBSEC Gamers.
It's a group.
Group, yep, on Facebook. And listed by Steve Dundas. So just if you're looking for it, you can search for his name in there. And it says, hey guys, possible question for future videos podcast. What do you think is the ideal points level for your event? As you mentioned on a previous video, that some armies don't scale above 2,000 points very well, ending up with things like 300 orcs. But writing lists for WATC at 1,500 points, we see Custodes army struggling to even function. Whereas, for example, a guard army can pack a Lord of War and still bring redundancies. Is too low a points limit having the opposite effect and punishing elite armies?
Yes, no, and maybe.
In that order.
Look, Steve makes some very good points there, and I actually agree with part of it, and I think it deserves some expansion on exactly why I'm saying that. Steve's first point is, does it punish elite armies? No, I don't think it does. I think that the argument that Guard can bring a Lord of War and still bring redundancies, in this particular event at least, is flawed. And partly because there's only two detachments. If I'd left it as three detachments,
mm-hmm.
I 100% agree Steve would probably be right. Because the second that you start allowing players to access multiple ways of building their army, the more ways they have of building their army with the detachments in 40K, the more flexibility they gain. We know that with Custodes, when their models are between sort of 60 and 100 points per model, and you've only got a 1,500 point army, you're only going to have 20, 25 models if you're lucky. And it won't even be that. Without spoiling it, so you can go and check out the army list, the two Custodes that are running in WATC, I believe, are just all bike armies. Now, those bike armies are somewhere between 80 and 90 points each per bike.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a couple of characters in there to make the battalion legal. They're about 200 and something points each.
Yep.
So the army is two characters and what essentially amounts to a dozen bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And is that the best army they can build at 1,500 points? Yes, probably. Would they benefit from 2,000 points to go pure Custodes? No, they just add more bikes. In a competitive environment, that's the way that army is built. I know that I'd love to see Terminators and the standard infantry, and certainly once Forge War gets their acting gear, that might change. But ultimately, for a competitive Custodes army, you're running bikes. So by limiting the detachments to two, what I've done there for the Guard at least, and using Steve's example as a Lord of War, what you end up doing there is going, okay, cool, I want my Shadow Sword super heavy tank. There's only three ways I can get that super heavy tank in 40K. The first is a super heavy auxiliary detachment, which gives me no command points, and I get my tank. So I've already used 500 points on my army, and I've used one of my two detachments. The second way is a Supreme Command detachment. Now, normally the Supreme Command is used to generate super combos with different characters from different factions. But still, taking a Lord of War and then the minimum three HQs, even if you stick to the Guard HQs, you're now paying another 150 to 200 points, depending on what you're picking, 100, 200 points, plus the cost of the tank in that detachment. You're still only left with one detachment.
Yeah.
The third way is a super heavy detachment, which is three Lords of War. And it'd be completely possible, and it is possible, because we've seen a Necron player do just this, and that's his whole army. It's three Lords of War. They're 496 points each, and that's all he's brought. It's an amazingly hilarious army. I'm not sure how well it'll do, but that's his whole army. It's three Tesseract Vaults.
So long as he has fun with it.
Yeah. So from the Guard's point of view, it doesn't matter which of those options I choose. I'm using at least a third of my points out of my 1,500 and one of my detachments, which is the most important part. Because now I know that I need to defend my tank somehow. Now, the most common way of doing that is infantry.
Yep.
So for Guard, you're using a battalion, a patrol, or a brigade at that point to get your infantry. Patrol doesn't give you enough infantry. Brigade has too many costs because you need extra models and other choices from other parts of the army list, which leaves you a battalion. So your battalion then has to be two HQs and three troops, and all of a sudden there's more costs there. Your troops are probably only 50 points a unit if you keep the minimum. Your HQs are about the same. But even if you've gone with the super heavy auxiliary, you're now up literally half your points.
Yeah.
And you've got 32 dudes with las guns and a tank.
Mm-hmm.
And while that does still leave you 750 points to play with, you've literally, to get that one big tank, you've used half your points value. Now, will that win games against some armies? Absolutely. Will it utterly fail against others? Yeah. I actually would bank on the Custodes at that point.
Well, that'd be the point of the matchup process.
Yeah. So I do kind of get Steve's point there, but I also think that the detachment limit has really helped us for this event. I've seen Demon players going, oh, I really need a third detachment to do what I want to do. The fact that they're having to make sacrifices to get an army on the table that they still think functions, I think actually creates quite a dynamic environment, because we're not playing people aren't allowed to bring their Adepticon LVO copy-pastes for the same points with the same detachments, the winning lists from those events.
Yeah, I think I'm going off on a tangent, which is really unlike me, I know. But what I was mentioning before about the higher-end players taking longer to play the game because they're spending the time actually critically analysing the game that's in front of them and the different moves that are available and the different strategies, and that's actually time consuming. We're not trying to encourage people to play slower because they're thinking about the game more critically, but we are trying to encourage people to think about the game more critically, to yeah. not just copy and paste army lists that they've seen. And I know you hate the word, but you know, international meta and things like that. What we're hoping to do is say, okay, by bringing 1500 points and two detachments, think about this game differently. Think about yeah. how you can modify what you would normally use. What changes can you make, and how can you make this still work? How can you make this be effective? How can you utilize to the best advantage these 1500 points within this
format,
these constrictions? Yeah. So really, we're trying to encourage people to think outside the box, because thinking outside the box,
well, it makes you a better player.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Certainly adds strength. And
I'm really hopeful. I mean, obviously, as the year goes on, we'll have other events where the points will go up and you will get to bring out some more toys. But the fact is,
it's funny because when you said that, sorry, I'm like, far out, it's September already. There's not much left. It's because no, I'm so busy focusing on show.
Yeah, we're focusing on show later in the year.
That's it. But it is actually only April. So, yeah, we do have
other events
coming up this year.
But you also have to then factor in the time constraints for the event itself.
Yeah.
So as TOs, you, proverbial you, colloquial us, whatever you want to call it, the TO in question has to, when considering the points values and detachments and all those other nitty-gritty game limits, also has to factor in the time that they have available for the event.
Yeah.
So when you have a two-day event, you can happily put six games in, 2.5 hours, maybe even 3 hours a game if you really want to go long.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to then have a situation where you're expecting the majority of players to complete their game in that time. You're never going to have everyone complete the game in that time. I think that's a false hope to cling to if you ever think that you're going to have all the players at your event finish on time. And certainly that's not our experience.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
I think the if you set a time limit that's appropriate for the points before you do anything, you can then obviously create the schedule. Part of the issue with...
I think what we had to do is actually the other way around. We had to go... So for this particular event that we've got coming up, which is a 1,500-point event, we've got one day and we want to fit in four games in that one day.
Well, that was literally about what I was getting
to. Oh, look at us reading each... Well, sort of, reading each other's sentences. So we're fitting in four games and so realistically... We can't go much more than 2 hours for those four games.
Not once you factor in breaks and moving. And we've also got the added complexity for this event that there is a match-up process where you have to have the teams
yeah.
discuss it and match up the events. Match up the teams. But you've also then got to, I suppose, as an organiser, factor in how long the day is going to be.
Yeah. So for this particular event, because as you said, we do have that matchup process, which sort of takes the game from 2 hours to 2.25 hours, really,
yeah.
doesn't it? So we're looking at 10.5 hours from player registration to the awards ceremony.
Yep.
So that's player registration starts at 8 a.m. First game starts at 8:30, but the award ceremony starts at 6:30 p.m. So that's a really long day, 10.5 hours for players to be concentrating for that length of time.
Yeah.
You know, add to that from a somewhat selfish, I guess, perhaps, perspective.
We're going to be there 15 or 16 hours at least.
That's it. We're there from 6 o'clock in the morning through till
at least 8
o'clock at night. We're going to start packing our trailer here at 4 o'clock in the morning. We'll get home, finish unpacking by 10 o'clock at night. So we're going from 4 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night with
at
travel
least.
Time.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, so that's, it's a really long day. So 10.5 hours for players to concentrate equates to a lot more hours for us. But if we were to push that out to 2.5 or 3 hours, you're looking at 15 hour days.
Yeah.
Now, it's hard enough for players to...
People don't like working more than 8 hours.
Well, I think people are more likely to be happier playing games for 10 hours than they are to work for 10 hours. But when you're taking that time away from your family, it's pretty difficult to say, I'm going to be out of the house for 14 hours.
Look, there's also the factor that people have lives. A lot of the guys often go to something, whether it's for dinner with their family or out to something with their partners or whatever it is, after the events. Mm. It's not uncommon to see partners rocking up at the end.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So if we ran a longer day, it then cuts into that. And you, you know, unless you're going out for dinner at 10:30, which I seem to remember we used to do.
Yeah,
like,
we used to do that when we were younger.
A million years ago.
Yeah. So yeah, the timing constraints. And on top of all of that, you could just say, well, why don't you just run three games? Then you actually don't. You have problems with getting a winner. And for competitive gaming, that is a significant problem.
Yeah.
Because there'd
countbacks
be nothing.
Countbacks are hard enough.
Well, we always try and write a countback system into the games these days anyway. But for this team event, if you work it out and say, okay, we've got 20 teams that start the day. And at the end of game one, we should have 10 wins. In theory, 10 winners.
10 winners, yep.
So at the end of start of game two, we have 10 teams on one win. They all play each other. So at the end of game two, we've got 5 winners who are on 2 wins. So then we hit round 3. Now, obviously, we're going to have 5 who have gone 2 undefeated, and we're going to have a 6th team to round that out to who's the next highest in the list. Yep. So those 6 teams now finish round 3, and we should have 3 in theory. We could have 2 and a few mixed, but, yep, you know, we're still going to have the top 4, essentially, going into round 4, which means at the end of round 4, it's completely possible to have 2 teams on 4 wins.
Yeah.
Which means that
it's probable. It's not even possible. It's probable.
Well, yeah. I mean, the likely outcome, absolutely. So it's completely possible for our teams to come to this tournament, play 4 games, go 4-for-4, and then not win.
Yeah.
Now, that's something we've always strived to avoid because from a player's point of view, it sucks.
Yeah. And Travis, one of the players who's been to quite a few of the OBSEC events, did suggest that rather than doing the 1,500 point 4 games in a day, we should do 1,000 points 5 games in a day. That was very heartily voted no by most of the players and certainly by us. So that is an option, you know, to add in a 5th game and go to a smaller points value and, you know, to be able to fit that 5th game in. It's not ideal.
No.
For so many reasons.
Yeah. There's a long list there. And you know, time is one. People are already whinging about 1,500 point games because they want 1,750 or 1,850 minimum, let alone most of them wanting 2,000. So I think that the next logical step for WATC is to actually become a 2-day event. That's ultimately where we're at the moment, is for us to, if the event continues to grow like it has.
That's certainly not that we're saying that we're going to do that. That's definitely a discussion for us to have
post-event once.
And off air.
It's also something that we want feedback from players after the event.
Yeah, definitely.
But I mean, assuming the event continues to grow like it has. So we had 56 players in teams of 4 the first year.
Yeah.
I think it was 56.
I don't know.
Yeah, it would have been because that sounds right. Because that gives even numbers of teams.
Okay.
Then we had 72 players, teams of 6 last year.
Yes.
And now we've almost doubled it this year, teams of 6. So we're at 120 players now. The room is going to be chock-a-block. It's going to those breaks between games and then the matchup processes are going to be rapid fire. They're going to be like, it's going to be difficult to move around the room. Everyone's going to have to be on it, and we're going to be starting on time. We're going to be finishing on time because we can't afford not to.
I was going to say I'll be taking a whip to crack, but
no, Jesus.
Oh, dear.
This is going to become a meme, you know, that if you keep this sort of stuff up.
I've really
Alan, if you're listening, get on that.
Just shush.
So the next logical step, if we continue to grow like we have and everyone's still enjoying the format and we want to keep that up, the next logical step is to go to a 2-day event. Now, if we go to a 2-day event with 5 games, then potentially we can up the points a little bit to 1750 because we're going to be reducing the length of the day. There's no pack-up stress at the end of day one. We can start earlier on day two and be finished at an earlier time. But that creates a whole other list of problems because getting 2 days away from your commitments outside of gaming is a challenge all of its own. Mm-hmm. The second that you say to your partner, hey, I'm playing all day today, I'm coming home, having dinner, helping you put the kids to bed, and then I'm going out tomorrow all day to play games, I'll be back for dinner, that is a significant challenge for some people. So it's something that has to be factored in. You know, will that hurt attendance if we go to a 2-day event? That's also got to be a factor because obviously from our point of view, we've got twice the costs essentially.
Yeah, but also the whole thing is that if we've got 120 people who are wanting to come to a one-day event and, you know, half that who want to come to a two-day event, well, then half of those people are missing out on the team event.
So yeah.
Lots of things to talk about and think about, but I think we've definitely gone off on a tangent there. Let's try and pull it back.
So there's a whole, as you can hear from this conversation, there's a whole raft of factors that go into how a TO decides on points values. And I think the danger is, as a TO, I want to run a tournament. It's 2,000 points, three detachments, missions from the rule book or the ITC champions missions or whatever you pick. And you put it out there and just, you don't actually consider some of the other factors that maybe players don't always see. So we don't make these decisions for points based for our events off the cuff. They're always made,
they're not made
in
lightly.
Consideration for what we want the event to achieve and to give players challenges across the year with, you know, some interesting differences in terms of hobby aspects and competitive aspects and so on.
Yeah. So some of the comments that we got on the thread on the Facebook group, Tim said he really likes the 1,850 point bracket from ATC.
Just to clarify, that's the Australian team challenge, not the American version if you're listening to us in the States.
Unfortunately, timeframes that requires people to 100% know how to play their army.
You know, with the ATC, and I'll use that in reference to the Australian one just again, the vote for this year has brought the points down from 2,000 last year to 1,850.
Mm-hmm.
So that was off the cuff of some of the stuff we've been seeing internationally, and certainly like CanCon, the big Canberra event that happens, and locally our events, we're seeing the same thing where games are taking longer. So the natural response to that is to decrease the points slightly to reduce some of the decision making.
Yes. So Mike Bourne has commented and said, yes, but ATC is a 2-day event, 3-3 or 3-2 game schedule, which is certainly, I guess, what we've just been saying, trying to fit in those extra games for the higher points value.
But
it's tricky.
I mean, we're hosting the ATC for Australia this year in September at Show. And I've already been talking to the Australian committee about this. And at one point we were saying, oh, we'll do 3-hour rounds. You know, 3-hour rounds and a reduced points value, we should be getting games finished. But we're going to have to run 6 games to get a winner.
Yeah.
So you're going to have 9 hours of gaming, plus a lunch break, plus the two other breaks.
Plus the two breaks, plus you're the match-up time.
You're at an 11-hour, 12-hour day. Hang on a minute, that's not going to work. So if we cut 15 minutes out of each game, we can get it back down again to, you know, just over 11 hours, but that's still a long day.
It's a heck of a lot, particularly for the interstate travellers who
potentially fly in the day before.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
and flying out
the night
of the second day.
So, no, look, I mean, 1,850 in 3 hours sounds like an ideal world, but there are, particularly, even though it's a 2-day event, it still creates some significant challenges.
So Steve has commented, it's a fair point about timing, though for what seems to be a competitive event, I would have thought 2,000 points to be on the money for most armies to be able to function without getting ridiculous.
What I'm assuming, because I haven't spoken to Steve about that, what I'm assuming he's referring to is that sort of mismatch he referenced at the start of the post around some armies not working at low points. And like I say, I think some armies are certainly handicapped to some degree at lower points. But I also think it requires a little bit of a change in your thought process to make them work at lower points values, because they might not have as point efficient choices as other armies. It does mean that you might have to murder your darlings and change the way your favourite units and not take some of them. But it doesn't mean you can't use them at that points value.
Tristan's written, as a GK player, I struggle with 1,500 points quite a bit. Our workable HQs are expensive and it's 315 points minimum just for 3 troops or a battalion. Doesn't leave a lot of room. At 2K, things are slightly better.
So Tristan's right in the regard that Grey Knights do get a little bit of a dirty end of the stick in that the Codex isn't the best. And I don't think anyone would deny that the Grey Knight Codex has lagged very badly behind. It needs a decent update from an FAQ, but more likely we'll get it in chapter approved later in the year. I think part of that, what he's just said, though, is also a decision-making choice where, as far as he's concerned, he has to run a battalion, and he also has to run specific HQs. The workable HQs, I think, is what he used there. I think at that point, if you're going mainable workable HQs are Nemesis, Dreadknight, Grandmasters, you're paying 200 and something points a Dreadknight. But you've then got to change the way you're thinking about the army. Maybe you're looking at allies. Maybe you're going, you know what? I'm not going to spend 300 points on troop choices. I'm going to run it as a vanguard. So I only have to have one HQ, not two. And I'm going to run Terminators or Paladins or, you know, if you change the way you're looking at the army, maybe your second detachment at that point, you take the bits you love out of Grey Knights and your second detachment is standard Space Marines or your... And I know that I can already hear the argument of, I only want to play pure Grey Knights. Well, at a competitive event, that becomes a choice where you go, I only want to play Grey Knights. I'm working with what I've got. How do I maximize the efficiency of what I want to take?
So Steve does address that, and he says there's a bit of an issue there, though. Elite armies often lean heavily on stratagems to function as expected. Having to stick to vanguard, spearhead, outrider detachments leaves you very poor on CP, whereas going battalion to get a reasonable CP tally hurts your army at low points values.
Again,
choices.
Yeah. When you look at... The funny thing about command points in the game has it's actually created a situation where I see plenty of people writing lists just to get command points.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that it happens online, it happens locally. I see it all the time. For WETC, I'm running a double Vanguard. So I've got the stock three command points and then I've got an extra two. I've got no way of getting free command points across the course of the games. I've got no way of regenerating them. I've got none of that stuff whatsoever. But when I built the army... The first thing I did was get all the stratagems out. I've got the deck of cards.
Mm-hmm.
And went, which of these do I actually see myself using?
Yeah.
And of the deck of 30 or whatever it is cards, I think I've got about four that I looked at and went, I have a plan for how these will impact on games. Are they going to be every game? No. I suspect a lot of the time I'm just going to be using it for that command point reroll. Do I need 8 to 10 command points to use that across a 5-turn game? No. Would it be nice? Probably.
But you haven't got it, so...
And that's kind of my point, is that when you start going, I need to spend this many command points to do this before the game, and I need to spend this many command points to do this at the start of turn one, and I need to spend this... If you plan at the front end and go, okay, I need this many command points, how do I get that to do what I want to do? And work backwards, you can actually write some reasonable army lists. If, on the other hand, you go, no, I'm going to run it as vanguards, then go through the deck and basically write off what you're willing to write off. And I'm assuming that like things like Grey Knights will want the Deep Strike. I think most of them get the Deep Strike for free anyway, but there's a Teleportarium one from memory that lets some things Deep Strike that can't normally. And if you're wanting to use that and you know that's going to cost you two or three command points, you're going to have at least five in theory.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with the other two and how do you make the best use of the other two then becomes part of the strategy. So hyper elite armies come with their own challenges, and just because it's not a hyper elite army doesn't mean they haven't got any other challenges to factor in. So it's a swings and roundabout scenario.
Yeah. I'm just having a quick look at some of the other comments. There seems to be there's 42 responses to that particular comment, so I'm trying to somebody's bringing up soup armies, but scrolling through those.
On the topic of soup armies very quickly.
Oh, good. You talk about that while I keep scrolling.
Part of the thing with soup armies, obviously when you're mixing and matching, you're still getting command points out of that. But the access to the stratagems falls away. So what you could do, for example, for Grey Knights, and we'll continue down the Grey Knight tangent, if you just want command points, it's very easy to get a battalion in place with another cheaper Imperial army. Now, Guard do it for about 250 points, give or take, to get your two HQs and three troops in a battalion. And then just run Grey Knights in the other detachment. And at that point, you could run it as Spearhead, for example, if you wanted Dread Knights. And you still got fast attacks and HQs and all the other slots in a Spearhead. And that's something to bear in mind as well. All of those micro detachments include slots for other units. So if you look at it and go, okay, I want seven command points, then you take a cheap battalion of something else. I don't know whether Sisters of Battle might even do it cheaper than that. They may do. I can't remember off the top of my head exactly what the HQs are worth. But you could, in theory, be willing to go down that road of an ally, drop that in, spend a couple hundred points on that, and then use that as a lift for the rest of your points so that you don't have the taxes elsewhere. So, I mean, if Tristan was saying 300 plus points for the three troops for Grey Knights, and I can spend 250 on guard for an entire battalion for three command points, I'm already saving points there. I'm still getting 32 bodies that'll claim objectives, that'll shoot las guns, that have a few cool orders and things. If I spend $315 on the guard, I'll be handing them plasma guns and auto cannons and a few other bits and pieces that'll then, I suppose, help bulk the army out to take casualties, to absorb charges, to score points. And that might not be a bad way of running Grey Knights, is a little battalion like that, if command points is your goal. And at a competitive event, like I said earlier, you have to be willing to make those choices if you want to be competitive.
Yeah.
At a fun theme event, I can completely see why you'd only want to run pure Grey Knights. And at this event, there's no harm in doing it. But that's a sacrifice you're making for your own personal preferences rather than the competition.
Just sort of reflecting on what we've been chatting about, I feel like for the last 36 minutes, we've been justifying why we chose 1,500 points, which is... And hidden in there was actually the answer to Steve's question. So his question was, oh, actually, no. I've got his question wrong. See, this is why it's always good to go back and check. I thought his question was, how do you choose points levels for your events?
Which
I was
going to say, what is the perfect points value?
Yeah,
is
let's what actually go was. Through how we choose that. And we sort of did hide that in there a little bit with around looking at the length of the day we have and how many games we're hoping to put in and how many hours we can sort of allocate per game and going from there. But the question is, what do you think is the ideal points level for your event? So, because I had a point, I'm going to twist it and still get it out there. I think the ideal points level for an event may have something to do with the tone and what we're hoping to achieve with the event as well. So the ideal points level for something like First Blood is going to be different, which is the event that we run at the beginning of the year, which is more of an intro hobby event. It's going to be different to our Masters event that we run at the end of the year in November, where the purpose of the, you know, that's not the right word for it. But it's a very different tone for that event.
Yeah, I don't think there's any one answer to that question because there's so many variables that go into it. Because as you up the points, you change the timing. As you change the detachments, you change the points. You change, you know, there's so many factors that go into it. And I think once you decide what the event's purpose is,
yeah,
that then helps you make those other decisions. So like Emma's just said, the First Blood event is one detachment. This year we did it at 1,000 points.
Was it 750 last year?
We've had it at 750 before, and I'm actually inclined to go back that way.
Yeah, me too.
Single detachment and no soup in a single detachment. And I think as Games Workshop's books come out, we're going to see less and less soup anyway because of the way the stratagems work and everything. But
the intent for that event is...
It's for starter armies.
It's starter armies. It's... potentially for newer players. It's a more relaxed event. It's hobby based. It's more of a fun introduction to tournaments and to
events. There were still really good lists.
And still really experienced players there.
Absolutely.
I'm not suggesting that it's only for newbies. I'm just saying that it's a gentler game. It's a more relaxed...
It's more limited for players, and the points value on top of the detachments and everything else limits it as well. We did 5 games that day at 1,000 points.
And it nearly killed us.
Yes, it did.
I don't know how the players went. I was too tired to notice.
I mean, when we went down to Albany for... Linebreaker was 2,000 points and 3 games. But we were staying at the venue.
Yeah.
We could start later. We all had breakfast together. We played the tournament.
Much smaller number of players there. We had the ability to be a lot more flexible.
Yeah.
It was more about the socialization Warhammer camp than it was about hardcore armies, although we did have some hardcore armies there this year.
So WATC, without any of the hobby scoring components, because it is a competitive event, it is
a competitive event. But it's not a hyper-competitive to the point of forgetting about sportsmanship and being underhanded and...
I think that just comes down to, your decorum and you know, the expectation around good behaviour, though.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't want to see any bad sportsmanship and people... screwing about with the rules and having arguments over silly things that they wouldn't normally if they were being scored on it. The fact with this event, though, is that if you're coming, you should be exposed. And I've seen a few comments, oh my God, look at that list. Oh my God, like that's hardcore. And I've gone, well, the event is a team event. You can't win it by yourself. Your team has to win it together. You don't want to be flagged negatively and forfeit around because you're behaving like lunatics. Poor behavior will not be tolerated at any event, whether it's scored or not for us. So you're still expected to behave like civil human beings to each other. Just because you're not being scored doesn't let you behave like a dickhead.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what I was thinking. I just love Adam Hill's quote that he, you know, puts out as often as possible. Basic rules for life, don't be a dick.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the basic rule for our event. Just don't be a dick.
So when you actually get down to it, though, the WATC is first and foremost about generating that team environment, which is something I really enjoy playing in. It's one of the reasons I'm really fortunate to get to play in the WATC
you
each year.
You are very fortunate to get to play in the WATC
and I've played at the Australian team events. I've played at ETC as part of the Australian team. Yeah. And I've loved every one of them because there's a camaraderie that occurs before the event, during the event, and it flows on after the event as well because you tend to get to know each other better. And, you know, particularly when you've got new faces in the group that you might not necessarily know well, you tend to know them better by the end of it, which is great. So it's a competitive event and the lists reflect that because everyone's, you know, taking their best list that they can, or most of them are. And there's nothing wrong with that. So for this event in particular, we had to balance time plus, actually achieving a winner without having any of the soft scores to help balance it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you factor all of those decisions in, the format hopefully reflects the decisions we had to make to get to that point. And then later in the year when we do get Masters throws some hobby events, hobby components back into it,
mm-hmm.
but not at a 50-50 percentage like First Blood has.
Yeah.
So you have to be the all-round hobbyist to win Masters, but I assume we will still get some really powerful lists coming to that event because it is the end-of-year Masters.
Mm.
So I think the tone of the event plays a big part in how we can, set that tone through points and detachment limits and things. Going lower points is not the end of the world, though. That's the thing I've seen constantly, and in the competitive 40K page on Facebook, one of our locals, Travis, makes that comment and goes, I cannot believe you're all freaking out at 1,500-point games. 1,500-point games, I don't think we've had a single one in the first 4 months of this year that's been more than 1,500 points. Crags didn't run one that was bigger. Outpost didn't. We're not. And I don't think anyone is before the middle of the year. I think all of the events that will run by the time we get 6 months into the year will have been 1,500 or less. And we slowly build it up on top of everything else to try and get to the end of the year where we do have the points for the big games. But I think there is no right answer to what's the ideal, what's the perfect points value, because I think if I were going to say we're going to run one points value indefinitely forever, I'd probably end up somewhere between maybe 1750. But that has its own challenges.
They all have their own challenges.
Yeah.
And I think each army has its challenges as well. So what may work really well for Grey Knights isn't necessarily going to work really well for the other armies.
Yeah.
So, and we try and set limits, which I guess in this one you could always look at it that, hey, look, it's difficult for all armies. So everyone's got the same challenges.
I mean, in reality, if we'd gone 3 detachments and 1,500 points, which is actually what the rulebook recommends, all that it would do was likely give players more command points. It might allow them to field a more optimized format because then you can afford to throw away units to get the command points for that third detachment, or it might allow you to field fortifications as your third detachment. And fortifications is something I've been thinking about ever since we published the players pack for this. It's something that I might make exempt for next time.
Yeah, it's too late now.
It is too late.
We're not changing things.
But I think 3 detachments would have been a detriment to the event because it only makes the cheaper armies better, if that makes sense. If I allowed 3 detachments for guard compared to 3 detachments for custodies, the custodies get nothing from that. All that happens is the custodies stick to a single battalion or single spearhead or vanguard or whatever they're using. I think they're running double outriders at the moment. But if to meet the minimums for a double outrider, they're spending all their points anyway.
Yeah.
Adding a third detachment doesn't help them. And all that does is helps other armies who can then afford to take a 10-man squad and make it 2 5-man squads to get the extra troop choice for no extra models and just get more command points.
But there's so many facets to this as well. It's not necessarily just about points values. So is there a specific points value with other limitations? So in this particular one, we've limited the detachments. We've also put limitations on for keywords. So how do those limitations then interact with that points level? Changes whether or not there's a standard points level that's going to work well across different events.
Yeah, and like the reference to the guard with the super heavy. If you take the ability for a guard player to take a Shadow Sword or a Baneblade or one of those big tanks away from them, can the guard army function without it? Sure. Does it make it a more fair fight when they have the access to those tools? I mean, the Custodes don't have a Lord of War. So if I said every player can take a super heavy auxiliary detachment on top of what they're taking, it doesn't mean anything to the Custodes.
Yeah.
Or the Grey Knights, for that matter. All it does is if those players want to make access to them, they're going to be taking Baneblades as a Imperial Guard detachment. So that becomes a question of, I only want to play pure Custodes, which is a self-imposed limit, I suppose, more than anything else. And again, that comes back to your choice and what you want to achieve for the event and your outcomes for the event rather than a limitation imposed by a TO. If I turn around and said you can only take pure single keyword armies, then that's another matter entirely. But when you have the option to do it, you're making a personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
And while I actually support that personal choice, because is it all of my armies? I don't think I've ever run a soup. I've run Inari once in 7th edition, which I suppose is a kind of soup. But even then, it was Craftworld. Mm. So I prefer running Mono Codex. That's my choice. I knew that when I went to LVO that I should have done something different. I knew that at any of the events I played at, I could have done it differently. But I'm self-imposing at that point. It's not the TO saying no. It's my preferences.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, we all make choices.
So
we have preferences.
You know, this has been a kind of a rambling topic. We're closing on 50 minutes now, and we promised we'd keep it short.
Yeah, no, we didn't. We really didn't.
So, I suppose, what's the perfect points value for 40K? There isn't one.
Yeah, that's it. What do you think the ideal points value is for your events? Yeah, don't know.
No, well, the perfect points value for your event is the one that the players engage with the most, that fits within the time constraints and the other boundaries that a TO has to work within, and that's supported by the community.
Mm.
If your players don't want to play, then, you know, obviously you've got to look at what you're doing. One of the reasons we vary it up so much is to keep giving variety, to let players experience all the different types of hobby events and competitive events and team events and everything in between. So, you know, we want to keep it diverse and we want to keep it interesting.
We want to maximize people's experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gets boring, people are going to not want to come.
Yeah, if you play the same 2,000 point, 3 detachment, 4 games in one day
against the same guys
every event,
yeah,
the scene gets pretty dull pretty quickly. And with the release schedule at the moment, even though our events are fairly regular year on year, you've still got a very release schedule. You've still got clubs running events around ours. Mm-hmm. You've still got stores that are now getting involved in running events around ours. And you've got a really diverse opportunity to play 40K a hugely massive number of different ways. And if we weren't varying it up and everyone was just doing the same thing, then, you know, I personally would find it getting old pretty quickly.
So for players who are looking at going to an event, who see a points value that they think is going to be tricky for their particular army... What I probably should have mentioned that I was going to ask you this off air, so you had a chance to think about it. But what piece of advice would you give them when they're looking at it?
Okay, so when I sorted my Tau army out for WATC, mm-hmm. I'd already self-imposed limits on what I was willing to put in the army, and that's purely because I like some models and don't like others.
Yeah.
So I went, okay, these are the models I want to use. How do I put that into the limits that I have?
I know I can write better Tau armies than I'm using, but that's what I want to use. And that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's the end of the conversation.
Just so we're clear, are you actually just putting this out there on air so that if you lose games, you've
lose
got
games.
A pre-written excuse?
That's not a factor. No, the if you go into with a limit and you can set your own expectations first, which is something we encourage you to do regardless of the event you're attending, you might have to look at the army in a different way. You might have to consider the fact that the tried and tested 2,000 points of LVO goodness that wins things or places top eight or Adepticon or whatever event you've been following online, you've got to consider the fact that they probably aren't going to work at 1,500 points and two detachments. So you've got to change the way you build the army. So you've got to be willing to take some risks and be a bit more dynamic with how you engage with the limit, rather than bemoaning the fact that you can't take your triple Avara, triple commander list.
How about we go, rather than you can't take your tried and tested and...
No, but I mean, we've still got players bringing some really cool Tau armies, and not one of them's the same, but that's kind of the point, is that those players have had to adapt to the fact that there's lower points, and you can see it as a problem where you can't play the list that you desperately think you should be allowed to play because that's what you always play, or you can take it on board as a challenge, rise to the occasion and say, you know what, how do I get the most out of what I've got the opportunity to use? And it might see you use new units that you've never used before. You might go, hey, you know what, at 2,000 points, that unit's a bit crap, but at 1,500, it's got a niche.
Mm.
Now, does that mean you have to buy more models? Yeah, I don't know anyone who'd complain about that necessarily.
I do. Might not be players, but I know people who would complain about it.
But I'd rather see it as an opportunity to grow as a player, to learn new tactics and try new things, than as simply a big problem that I'm going to begrudgingly deal with because it's the event and I have to do it, by simply taking a model or two out and just running the same list. Because if you do that at 2,000 points and you have to take 500 points out of the army, it's not going to play the same way. Mm. You're going to have to drop a detachment more often than not as well in this particular example. So you're better off actually starting from the ground up, thinking, and for the team event, you've also got that to consider, how many allies, how many detachments you can actually take of different factions. So it all becomes a challenge and a puzzle for you to solve that you can't then just go to the internet and Google. And again, I think it makes you better at list writing, it makes you better as a player, and it gives you more opportunity to grow your own ability on the table. And I know that sounds really wanky and pretentious because it's still a dice game, but the best players make the best use of the opportunity they have by being flexible, by understanding the game mechanics, and by utilizing army building and list writing techniques as well as on the table techniques that other players aren't ready for and aren't used to.
So to sum that up, really what you're saying is be prepared to think outside the box.
Yeah, improvise, adapt, overcome.
Yeah, so for me, I guess I think that meta starts somewhere. You know, if we weren't seeing people thinking outside the box and doing something different and being able to think strategically and being able to think in a different way to what's usually done, then we wouldn't see that meta changing.
The best part about the word meta is there is one example I can give for it.
Mm-hmm.
You're better off leading the meta than just being part of it.
That was a much more eloquent way of saying what I was just trying to say.
The best players don't, they're not part of the meta.
No, exactly. They lead it. And that's what we're trying to encourage. We're trying to encourage people to think outside the box.
Not going
to
work all the time, but...
No, but you know what? If you try it, you still learn from it.
Absolutely.
Everything's a learning opportunity.
Well, life's the same situation, but in the course of tabletop games, if you're the one who's setting the standards and making people chase you to try and beat you, and you're not doing the same thing every time because you're constantly ahead of your own game, then you're going to win more. It's kind of that easy.
So really, we haven't made this difficult for you. We've made it a positive challenge for you, and we're doing you all favours. You're welcome.
I'm just hopeful that the guy running the triple Tesseract vault at WATC at 1,500 points doesn't just rock up to Masters at 2,000 with a four.
Four. Yeah.
That's not leading the meta, guys.
Well,
it could be interesting.
Yeah.
But, there's a lot of really interesting lists. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Fix it. Yeah.
So you can go and check out all 120 lists. I've done my best to get the formatting roughly the same, but it's not perfect. And there's also one of the guys who, I've forgotten his name, was actually on the Obsep Gamers group with a big pie chart of all the army breakups and detachment breakups and showing off what armies were coming. And out of 120 players, the only faction not included, major faction I should say, because I don't remember seeing any Sisters of Silence there either, but the major faction not included was actually Dark Angel Space Marines.
Yeah, so that's James who's put that up again. So, James, thanks very much, because last time you put it up, I felt compelled to then go through and do that for a blog post. So, great. Now I'm
You've
feeling
saved
the
her
pressure.
That.
No, I'm feeling the pressure again. So, which one did you say you hadn't seen?
I think he says the only one that's not on there is Dark Angels.
Yeah, which was the one that you said that you hadn't seen, though? Sisters?
Sisters of Silence.
No, the Sisters of Battle. Sisters of Silence
are essentially only one unit entry anyway, but I think, has he got Inquisition and Assassins on that list?
There is Imperial Soup, Chaos Soup, Imperial Guard, Tau, Space Marines, Chaos Space Marines, Blood Angels, Adeptus, Tyranids, Adeptus, Custodes, sorry, the other one was Adeptus Mechanicus, Imperial Agents, Celestine, Drakari, Craftworld, Yunari, Deathwatch, Grey Knights, Necrons, Space Wolves, Harlequins, Orcs, Gene Stealers, Chaos, Thousand Suns, Death Guard, Renegades and Heretics, Sisters of Battle.
Yeah, I think of the major factions, the only one not represented then is Dark Angels, which is really interesting given how well they did it at Adepticon recently and how well they've been doing over on the European circuits. So, interesting that we have no Dark Angels present.
Mm.
But I think everyone else is there. So, it's quite a varied list. I think the Astra Militarum have the highest count across the team. So, I think out of 20 teams, 15 of them have guard of some description.
Yeah.
And then Tau, despite the internet saying they're terrible, I think are on 11 in 20 teams.
And the highest represent... So there are a few that had 11 playing them. I think the highest representative was 15, which is Imperial Guard.
The Astra Militarum, yeah.
Yeah.
So, 15 teams out of 20 with guard is pretty indicative of what the Perth community thinks.
Yeah, I mean, there's 15 with Guard, just 11 out of interest, with Tau, 11 with Thousand Suns, and 11 with Death Guard.
What about, can you give me the number for Tyranids?
I can. Only 6.
So, despite the fact that the internet says that flying hive tyrants are the bee's knees, and we haven't had the FAQ as of recording this, we've only got 6 out of 20 teams running Tyranids.
Mm.
What about, what was the other one? Inari?
Inari 3.
Only 3 there, and Craftworld Elder.
Craftworld Elder, they're up there with 9.
Okay. It's interesting that, there's obviously still preferences being made personally as opposed to just buying the latest, most powerful. I mean, without the FAQ, I was assuming that we'd have Tyranids in 2/3 of the armies, and it looks like we've barely made a quarter.
Yeah.
It's an interesting breakup. We'll make sure that we get in touch with the creator and get his permission first, and then assuming he's happy, we'll chuck that in the show notes as well for this episode. But we'll leave the topic here. Is there perfect points value for 40K? No.
If there is, we don't know what it is.
If you think, feel free to leave comments on the website or in the Facebook page or wherever you get the opportunity to comment on this episode and tell us your thoughts. But in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to wrap up the episode. Right, well, this hour episode, well, it's an hour plus now by the time we get to this point, because that topic went a little bit long. Even with some of the little edits that I've made to it, it's going to be long.
Mm.
And I'm sure we could keep going on about it for some time.
Yeah, and I still think we just jabbered on for over an hour, and I'm not sure anyone's going to get anything from it. But hey, look, hopefully there's some little nugget of wisdom hidden in there.
Look, I think...
Let us know if you find one.
The trick with this episode, I suppose, is it's about us giving you some of our points of view.
Yeah, and the part of
sharing
our thought process that goes into creating these events, and that we don't just
pick
a number and hope for the best.
There's actually a lot of planning that goes into the tournaments we run, and while the format's settled down over the last couple of years where we can so that we know what works and what doesn't. Because of the release schedules, we're constantly having to reassess. And just quickly before we do finish the episode, the biggest one that we're going to deal with more recently is the release of the Drakkari,
mm-hmm.
with one of their special rules giving them benefits when they take, I think it's three patrols and then six patrols, I think, is the next buff.
Yeah.
And within, as soon as that was previewed on the website, those questions started, not just for us directly, but into the ITC groups that I'm part of.
Yeah.
You know, are there going to be exceptions for Dark Elder, with some tournament organizers around the world going, yeah, sure, we're going to increase everyone's detachment limit to six, which I think is a terrible idea.
However, if those tournament organizers...
It's up to them.
Yeah.
It's up to them. I'm not saying that, you know, they shouldn't or they can't. I'm saying that, in my opinion, I think it's not...
You're saying that we're not going to be.
Yeah. There's other tournament organisers saying, oh, we'll give an exception for Dark Elder where if they only take patrols, then they can take six. But they have to take six. You can't take five or four. And then there's others saying, no, as long as they take patrols, take as many as they like. That changes the landscape completely. And I've got my own thoughts on that. And having now played a game with it, I'm even more sticking to my guns. In my thought process behind it, but that can be covered in our review of the Dark Elder book in the next week or two. So, you know, as the books come out, the landscape changes again, and we have to assess and decide whether there's a need or a cause to change format and how that impacts on the rest of the event and how that impacts on people's armies and experiences. So that's going to be a constantly evolving and changing place to be alongside the points values and, you know, how what we see happen at events, and not just ours, but around the world. So it's a complex topic, and it's one that I'm sure we'll have to revisit at some point publicly as well.
Do you think there's any chance that we could do a podcast on something that's not a complex issue? Just, you know, for ease for us, for one, we just do something where we go, this is what we think, this is why we think it. It's a nice, clear-cut, black-and-white response.
Look, if there was something that was that easy and we were just right, then everyone else probably already knows it.
Yeah, it's a bit boring anyway, isn't it?
Anyway, we hope you enjoyed the episode. You can reach out and find us on all the usual social media outlets, Facebook and Twitter, where we're most active.
So not active on Twitter.
You may not be, but I am. It's on my phone. You can also see us on the website, objectivesecure.com.au. We put articles on there that we don't feature on the podcasts, and we obviously do the wrap-ups and army photos and all the stuff from the events, which is awesome. But look, the next time you have a podcast from us, it'll be post-WATC. And we'll have winners to talk about and lists, and we might even do an easier topic for Emma where we can pick the top five winning lists and break them down a little bit and sort of inspect the top ranking lists and some of the more interesting lists as well, and look at how they did and who they played, and have a bit of an analytics day with some of the more interesting armies. How does that sound?
Yeah, you know, when I did biostats at uni, that was straight after beverage appreciation. So
well, look, we can have a glass or two before we do that episode. That's
then,
fine.
Then, yeah, that'll be great.
Until then, guys, I hope you enjoyed the episode. Stay in touch, and yeah, we look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Take care.
Listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.